Hello and welcome to a post Summer Games Fest episode of Starside Chat. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron, and with me as always is Zach. How's it going, Zach?
Good. Yeah, so nothing from Nintendo, but I guess Summer Games Fest / fake E3 is maybe winding down, if not completely over. I know there was something about like another showcase like next week maybe from somebody, but I don't remember who it was.
Sadly, no Nintendo news, unfortunately. We thought that maybe, or at least I thought that they were definitely going to have a Direct at some point this week, but no, we still have no idea what's going on.
They could still do like a Pikmin Direct.
That's the crazy thing, is that's the only game we're aware of on the horizon is Pikmin.
Do you think they're a little bit going silent because like this is the end of the Switch and they're like about ready to say new hardware, new console generation, here's our launch lineup, and they don't want to like show us those games and you'd be like, wait a minute, this looks like it's running on different hardware than the Switch.
Well, that could be crazy to go a whole generation with just one Mario game though. I mean, I guess I don't know how uncommon that is, but and what do they? So they said that we can expect hardware news in fall of 2020, not until 2024, right?
I thought it was spring.
Maybe it was spring.
It might have. I don't remember off the top of my head. It might have been spring. Was like that would be like the earliest. Nothing up until then, anyway. But yeah, that still leaves like a gaping hole in the fall for what Nintendo's going to release.
Nothing for holidays, except I guess for Pikmin, but I don't know. What's your hype level for Pikmin?
I'm interested. I'm not like, I haven't played the previous Pikmin game, so I'm not like crazy about it. But also, like I did play that, what was that game? That indie game that was a Pikmin-like?
Wonderkin or something, right?
Tinykin. Yeah, I played that game and I was like, if Pikmin is just kind of like this, but like maybe bigger and done by Nintendo, like I would play that. So yeah. I don't know. I'm interested, but I'm not like gaga over it. I was thinking if Nintendo did have a launch lineup, what would it be? Would it like, so maybe a mainline Mario game like Odyssey 2? Maybe Metroid Prime 4?
Yeah. I have long thought. So when they always show, when you watch like the developer making up videos for Breath of the Wild, they were like, well, we went back to the roots and we wanted to see what was interesting about the first Zelda. And they had that like makeshift Zelda maker. And I have a long thought that they have that Mario maker, which everyone loves. They could make a Mario maker, or sorry, a Zelda maker that I think would sell really well.
Yeah, actually with Link's Awakening, they sort of had like that sort of old school like top-down Zelda thing where you could sort of make your own dungeons and like challenge.
Yeah, there was the dungeon maker, exactly.
So I wonder if they do that but like make it much bigger and more fleshed out. That would be an interesting idea.
That'd be a good launch title, I'll say that. Did you see that they're making a new 1-2 Switch?
Oh yeah, what was it called again?
It's called like Everybody 1-2 or something.
It's something weird. That was kind of a quiet one. I think everybody knows, okay, this, you know, 1-2 Switch was not a big hit and people didn't care about it, but we're doing a sequel for some reason. So here you go.
Well, we could speculate about Nintendo all episode, but should we get into some news?
Yeah, so we were texting back and forth about this. Hideo Kojima shared images of him and Nicolas Cage at his studio. And
yes, the
so
iconic
the speculation
picture.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, whenever someone visits Hideo Kojima at his studio, they always have that iconic picture of them standing in that completely white room with that statue, and they're just like chilling out by that statue.
Yeah, and so the speculation is, well, Nicolas Cage definitely got like scanned into their system and he's now for sure like unofficially confirmed in Death Stranding 2.
Now he might not do a voice because famously in Death Stranding he had that one director, or no, he had Guillermo del Toro was in it, but it wasn't Guillermo del Toro playing the voice. It was just his like face.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
So it could be.
I guess
be,
that would be an easy way to get like a recognizable person into your game without having them, okay, we need you for like 6 weeks to record dialogue.
Yeah. I could totally, I mean, who wouldn't do that? If you're a celebrity who is like in any way into like cool, weird stuff, which Nicolas Cage is definitely into weird stuff, and somebody was just like, hey, come to Japan, I'll scan you, it's going to take like 20 minutes, I'll show you around my insane studio, and then you can peace out, and then you'll be in a game like 3 years from now. I would totally do that.
Now, what if Nicolas Cage, his face is in the game, but it's John Travolta's voice?
Now, that would be crazy. Very meta, and I would love that.
That would be crazy.
We are in the, so it's Summer Games Fest is pretty much over. I don't know how many other like weird one-off events Keely will say is like under this umbrella. Like I don't think Gamescom is technically part of Summer Games Fest, but maybe it is. I don't know. Who knows? That's for a while. But we did two podcasts last week about pretty much all the press conferences, but the ones we missed were the Ubisoft one and the Capcom one. So we're going to talk a little bit about both of the, well, not really the Capcom one because nothing really happened, but what did you think of the Ubisoft press conference?
Now, I didn't get to watch it live, so I basically watched a recap of it and some interesting stuff there. I think the Avatar game is maybe bigger than I expected it to be.
It looks like a real game. Like they kept showing footage of it, and I was like, man, this seems like an actual game.
Yeah, that took me by surprise because I kind of was not expecting it to be that much of a game, but I guess it is. It seems almost like the standard sort of Ubisoft, almost like Far Cry style of thing.
Yeah, where there's going to be like bases that you take out, which I'm kind of interested in. And the most important, or I guess the thing I think people aren't highlighting enough, is that the entire campaign is playable in co-op. So like you can play the whole thing with a friend if you want.
Yeah, I know it's like it's a little bit weird to be like, you know, we have the Na'vi that you're going to play as, but also like parts of it look like just like a third person shooter.
Yeah.
Was this, correct me if I'm wrong, but that it's by the people that made The Division? Did I hear that correctly?
Oh, is that maybe I skipped that part. I'm not sure. Whenever there was a developer talking on stage, I would usually skip past that and just go straight for gameplay.
Okay, well, double check me on that because I don't know if that's accurate. But that is like interesting because I feel like I don't know what else that team would be working on right now because it's not like Division 2 is still like a huge thing for them to be working on. But
it's interesting because so a trap you could fall in with an Avatar game is to be like, well, you're a Na'vi, so you only have like a bow and arrow or whatever. I don't know. I feel like people didn't super enjoy that Far Cry Primal where you just had like bones as weapons.
Yeah.
So you are a Na'vi who was captured as a child and trained as like a child soldier in the ways of the humans. So you can use guns basically is what that means. and I don't know if there's any sort of system for like if you use guns more or like Na'vi weapons more or like if you like lose your whatever the Na'vi equivalent is of humanity or whatever. I'd be interested to see. But the gunplay looks great.
So what's your interest level in this game after seeing this?
I don't know. I do want to see. I have not still seen Avatar Way of Water, but I think I do want to see it. I remember enjoying Avatar, the first one. I don't know. If this is a $70 game, I'm probably gonna not play it, I guess, unless one of my friends is like, dude, Avatar, we gotta play as Na'vi, as like a joke. That's pretty much the main reason I would play this game is as a joke so I could say that I was a Na'vi. What about you?
Like you, I kind of liked the first movie, even though it was just kind of basically a ripoff of like Dances with Wolves and Fern Gully, but it done on like a massive
huge
budget
scale.
And I was like the first time I saw it I was like a little bit taken in by the spectacle of it, especially since it was like kind of the first time that like 3D actually worked well in the theater. But I went back and watched it again at the theater, and it was like way less impactful to me the second time. And I don't think I've seen it since. And I'm not super like enamored with that world, yeah, or like the Na'vi as like an interesting like alien race of some sort. And so I still, like you, have not seen the second movie, and like there's not a lot about this game that's really doing it for me. So I think I will pass on it, like especially if it's $70. But
yeah,
there was also in this Ubisoft show some more on that Prince of Persia game.
Yeah, they showed a little bit more of the Prince of Persia game, which looks great. And if it is really like a Metroidvania, I think I probably will pick that up. It seems cool.
Yeah, and I think it is coming out in like January, so like it's usually like a pretty fairly open time for games. I know there's like a little bit more coming out early 2024, but I like Metroidvania, so I would definitely probably play this.
They also showed some free DLC for Sea of Thieves, which they keep supporting. They've been supporting it since it came out. For Monkey Island, it seems like it's going to be, I think people are pretty excited about this. It was definitely weird. I think the first reaction people had is, oh, this is really weird. But afterwards, like, okay, this is kind of cool. So if you like Monkey Island, you can engage with it in a new way by playing Sea of Thieves.
Yeah, I think it makes sense from Sea of Thieves' standpoint if you're like bringing in these interesting sort of collaborations like that. Definitely cool. Like the Pirates of the Caribbean edition, like a year or two ago, whenever that was, made a lot of sense. It was very smart, I thought.
I didn't put this in the show notes, but at one point in the press conference, a guy wearing like a fake future outfit showed up. Did you see this in your recap?
No.
A guy came on stage and he had a weird vibe where he was kind of like, he was dressed in like a crazy future trench coat and had these like blue future glasses on. And he kind of had this air of like, look at how funny I am. Can you believe I'm doing this? but I guess he was some Netflix executive and he was there to promote some sort of animated Blood Dragon spinoff cartoon show that's happening on Netflix.
Yeah, Captain Laserhawk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for this a while ago.
And seems weird. I'm not really sure what it is.
Well, it seems, I think it's just an anime show based on Far Cry Blood Dragon, but I don't know anything about it beyond that. But I mean, I liked that, like, Far Cry Blood Dragon was definitely my favorite Far Cry thing I've played. So
I agree with that. Yeah, that was great. I played it twice.
So yeah, I mean, I would potentially watch this. It would require me to resub to Netflix, which I've not done in a long time. I don't know that it's that big a draw that I would resub specifically for this, but I'm interested to hear what the reception is for this show.
And then they ended it with a prolonged look. This is what they teased at, I think, the Microsoft show. They teased that they would have prolonged gameplay of that Star Wars Outlaws game, which they did. They had a full thing where you're in a mission and then you get out of the mission and then you like kind of turn it in and then you're like in the spaceship for a little bit. But what did you think of this whole thing? It was a pretty long gameplay segment.
Yeah, I mean, it just made me think I wish that Starfield had done like a mission, like a full mission gameplay showcase. Cool. And it does, it really surprised me because I think there was a part where it's seen that you're able to like take off in a ship and like fly out to space. And then like immediately you're in like a space battle, almost like No Man's Sky style. And I wonder if that's going to be a thing that can happen in Starfield. I kind of imagine that it won't work that way.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be that seamless transition.
So yeah, I almost wonder if this, to some extent, especially since it's tied to such a big franchise, if it will, I mean, I don't know when this is coming out, but like a little bit steal some of the limelight from Starfield. But not for me personally, because I'm not like a huge Star Wars guy, at least not since Disney took over Star Wars. But I don't know. I also think I want more of like what Starfield is offering, but just to like have the like the name and that sort of iconic universe, I do think this will draw a lot of people in. For sure.
They did a lot of interesting things, and a little bit, I don't know. I was watching people react to this on Twitter, and somebody was like, this is giving me real Watchdog vibes. And I was like, what? Oh. And then I read the like reply tweets, and it was because, do you remember back in the day that very, very first Watch Dogs trailer that was like crazy and they got a lot of flack for, because the when they actually released the game, it was like not like that?
Yeah,
it was similar to famously there was that I think it was like a Killzone trailer that was like, it came out, was like very CGI and like not really representative of the final game. And a couple of years after that, there was the first reveal ever of Watch Dogs, which was a great moment, a great E3 moment. If you watch that trailer, it is very, very impressive. But if you go to the
less so.
If you go to the original game, yeah, I mean, I don't think they really hit their stride until Watch Dogs 2. Was it just called Watch Dogs 2, or was there a subheading?
I think it was just Watch Dogs 2. The Watch Dogs Legion did not have a number in it for some reason.
Watch Dogs 2 I loved and was a great game. But yeah, so this person was speculating like, well, I mean, there's a lot of interesting things going on in this trailer, but like, I wonder how much of this is just for this trailer, basically. Because it is crazy. Yeah. Like, she's in a mission space, and then she hops on a motorcycle thing, and then is just like flying over to a road and then gets to the next place. And then also the thing that was interesting, you can choose to like bribe this person at one point or not bribe them. She chooses to not bribe them. And then she has like a wanted level when she leaves, which is very interesting for a Star Wars game where you're like wanted by the Empire. It like flashes the full screen wanted, and then you have to, I guess, get away. But, that is probably the most interesting part of this trailer to me, is that there is a wanted system in this game.
Yeah, almost going for a GTA style thing.
Yeah, it's weird. Because in a GTA game, or even in Watch Dogs, the way to fix that is to just like, you know, get into another car and go to like a paint shop, or, you know, get far away from the police and not be seen for a long amount of time. But with the Empire, if you're on a ship, like if you're on a planet, does that mean you have to leave the planet? I'm so curious to know what the specifics of this system are.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious how sort of open worldy it feels like, being able to, like, if the thing they showed isn't over promising and you can sort of do that No Man's Sky style thing of flying out into space with like no loading screen. I mean, the loading screen is basically how long it takes you to fly out there. Yeah. But you know, if they're able to pull that off but still have like, you know, a story driven like RPG style game. I mean, definitely, like, we've talked in the past about how like the Star Wars Jedi games are not really for us because we're not like super into like Souls likes.
Yeah.
This, if it is just kind of like a somewhat open worldy, like sort of Uncharted style RPG type of a game, that would definitely be more up my alley than the Star Wars Jedi games. But some of me like does still wonder, like, is this over promising?
Yeah. Well, I guess it remains to be seen. They showed some other stuff at this press conference. I didn't really put anything else in the show notes. They had some like Mario and Rabbids thing about Rayman coming into the game. But was there anything else you wanted to highlight about the Ubisoft show that we didn't cover?
We didn't really talk about the Assassin's Creed Mirage stuff.
Yes.
I think it's interesting that they are going more back towards like an older style of Assassin's Creed game. Like, maybe they realize that they've expanded that series so much that they've almost lost a little bit of their core audience with it, and maybe this is like a way to sort of get them back again. Or like for me, I played the first like two or three, must have been three of those games, which like puts me weirdly in like the middle of the Ezio trilogy.
Yeah.
And then that was kind of the last I played of them. Like, I played a little bit of what was the one that was like part of Project Stream? Was that
The Roman one? Yeah, I don't remember.
Whatever one that one was,
or I know, played it was some of.
Yeah, I can't remember which one that one was, but I played some of that one, and I liked it, but I like didn't stick with those games long, and they're like so long.
Yeah, they're dense.
I think that's part of why I've fallen off of the series in such a big. We have a friend of the show who plays these games every time they come out, and he's like a big fan of them, and he's always playing them, and it like will take him like a long time.
Months.
Yeah, to get through
them. Because also they support, like they are pretty good at supporting them. They'll constantly be coming out with DLC. That Valhalla one, I feel like had like 5 DLC drops or something crazy like that.
Yeah, and it, like I remember talking to our friend who plays these games, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I'm like 150 hours in, and I haven't even like gotten close to the end." It's just like, man. They definitely want to make it so that like this is the only game you need to buy in a year, and yeah, you're like good to go with this. And it's sort of almost like it's not a game of service, but because they throw so much content at it post-launch, it almost feels like a single-player game of service, mm-hmm, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think this one, the Mirage, is supposed to be a little bit smaller scale. Like, I don't know that they're going...
Yeah, they're going back to basics with this one, they said. Yeah. So it's not going to be crazy. Like, you're right that, like, Valhalla and whatever the Egyptian one was kind of, like, blew up as far as, like, scope. And I think the Greece one, too, is just, like, it was so much stuff. And I think they're really scaling down for this one and focusing more on just, like, core mechanics and telling, like, one story.
Yeah, because, and maybe we'll talk more about this later, but like when Obsidian released Outer Worlds, like one of the most compelling things about that to me was, oh, it's not like 80 hours to get through this game. You can complete the main story in like a relatively short amount of time. And then like, even if you try to 100% it, you're still not looking at like 80 hours of gameplay. I was like, that is like... is such like it eases my mind so much to know that this is like an achievable like completion. especially if you like to play a lot of other games and you sometimes will get like I don't want to say it's like low attention span, but kind of where you do tend to hop back and forth between games, because sometimes like if I've spent, even with like Tears of the Kingdom, which we're going to talk more about later this episode, like, I got to a point where I had done most of everything, and I was like, you know what, I'm ready to wrap this up. And I love that game, but, like, there is such a thing as, like, overstaying your welcome.
Yeah.
So I would be okay if more games did, like, shorter run times, and then maybe that would help them actually launch games faster as well. But
Zach, did you watch the Capcom press conference?
We were texting a little about this as well, and I saw like the start of it where they were like, here's that trailer you already saw for this like weird underwater samurai game, and I was like, okay, weird way to start this off since we've literally saw this a day or two ago.
The exact same trailer.
And yeah, the exact same trailer, nothing new there. And then they were like, okay, now here's a Mega Man Hero Collector for your mobile phone. And I was like, okay, I'm done with this. Like, there's not going to be anything worthwhile here.
I skimmed through this, and the only interesting thing is, you remember that Progmata game?
Oh, yeah, I did hear about this. Yeah, so they delayed. It was literally a trailer just to announce a delay for Progmata.
No gameplay. I don't think we've seen gameplay of this game. We don't know what it's about, but you're like a crazy robot suit person, and you've got this like magic girl with you.
It looks vaguely Kojima-like, that game.
It does.
And so like, I am totally open for this game like whenever it happens. But like, yeah, we've been waiting in seeming radio silence for a long time.
I guess I lied. There is some gameplay, it seems like, in this trailer. But I could not tell you what it's about or what you're going to be doing moment to moment. But it is delayed until question mark. It was delayed, I guess, once until this year. but they showed like a little graphic that was like 2022 crossed out, 2023 crossed out. Next one is question mark. And then they just had like a sorry with a sad face. So who knows when this is coming out, but this is probably the only thing that was really worth watching the Capcom press conference for. Everything else was pretty, as the youth would say, mid.
Yeah. So I don't think I miss much by not watching very much of this.
But, now, we have compiled sort of a top five interesting things we saw at Summer Games Fest. But what is your number five?
I put down for my number five that Metaphor Reeve Fantasio game.
Oh, yeah.
Which is from the Persona, like that team, Persona like 4, 5, and maybe even 3. But it's just like the art style of it is crazy. And yeah. I'm very curious if they are able to sort of do a game like that that has a little bit more appeal because it's not so in the weeds on like, okay, capture these different demons Pokemon style and then like you can combine them and power them up and all that. I get a little bit lost in the weeds and some of that stuff. Yeah. So if they're able to make this more of like a classic RPG style game, even if it's turn-based, like, but to have like their art style and their ability to like create like fun, interesting characters to like be a part of your party mm-hmm. that you can get to know. I think that would be very cool. So I'm very curious to find out more about that game. What's your number five?
We talked about it last week, but it was part of the Humble show. Or no, I'm sorry, the Wholesome show, the Wholesome Direct. It's that Everdeep Aurora game. Speaking of art styles, this is a game where you're like a little cat person. And it's like very, very retro, very almost monochromatic. And you're just a little cat person in a cloak and you're traveling around a world. I don't even know if there's combat. It seems like there maybe is mining, but you're traveling around. I think you're looking for something. And it just like, I fell in love with the art style so much. And it's kind of like, it's almost like standard def where it doesn't fill up a widescreen monitor. And on the left, there is like your inventory as well as like tooltips. And on the right, there is a map. So just like everything about this is just like, it looks great. And it's coming out for Switch. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is the one that looks like a Game Boy game.
Yeah. I'm very interested in it. And I think I'll pick it up when it comes out for Switch.
Yeah. It looks cool.
I don't think they gave a release date on it, actually.
I think they just said 2024.
Yeah. Just 2024 coming to Steam and Switch. So that's my number five. What's your number four?
My number four is Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown.
Ooh.
So I love Metroidvanias, and to have them done on like a big budget is every time one of those comes out, I feel like you got to jump on those because they don't have them that often. You get a lot of indie Metroidvanias, but like the big budget ones don't come around very often. And so. I really hope that not only is it good, but it's like sort of a new launching point for like the Prince of Persia series. Like I'm cool if they don't want to like try to make it a huge franchise that competes with like Assassin's Creed or whatever else Ubisoft has going on. Yeah. But if they want to make it, you know, and maybe they even do like a Metroid thing where it's like we've got our 2D Metroidvanias and we've got our like bigger, more like third person games, even though I guess there's this first person, but you know what I mean. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I will definitely play that game. What is your number four?
So I put a link in the show notes, but the trailer I found was just the year old one from its reveal. But I watched a lot of those Easy Allies because they're like in California, so they went to all of the like in-person stuff, and all of them were blown away by this game called Cocoon, which I guess was revealed last year, but it's playable now, and I think it's coming out fairly soon. And it is just a weird puzzle game. There's only one interactive button, so the only other thing you can do is interact by pressing a button. But it's crazy because like basically there are these like marbles almost or spheres. And you dive into them, and each of these spheres has a boss in it that you have to defeat. And when you defeat the boss, you come back up out of the sphere, and then you can like you get an ability or something like that. And the bosses, you just have to fight with like kind of environmental challenges, because again, you can only interact, you can't like fight or anything. But the person I was watching describe this said it was like impossible to describe, but it was like incredibly intuitive and just like nothing they had ever played before. And I watched a bunch of gameplay of it, and it does seem very, very cool. I think it might be coming to Game Pass, but this is one that was totally not on my radar, even though they announced it last year. But apparently it was like blowing everyone away on the floor at Summer Games Fest.
Yeah, I remember this now that you mention it, but like watching the trailer that you have linked to, like, I don't remember them showing this much when they initially revealed it.
Yeah.
And it looks similar, but like also kind of different than I expected it to be. But it does look cool.
It seems very cool. I hope it eventually comes out to Switch, but I probably will play it on PC because I think it is maybe a Microsoft exclusive for a while.
Hmm. Interesting.
What's your number three?
All of mine are boring because they're like none of them are like the indie picks, but for number three I have Avowed, which I know
some people
were a little bit hit or miss on, but like I don't know, I like Obsidian, I kind of trust Obsidian to make good games, but also like I liked The Outer Worlds so much.
Yeah.
And what they basically did was beat Bethesda to the punch in terms of like a sci-fi like Fallout space adventure style game, but did it on like a smaller scale so it didn't feel overwhelming. And basically I think that's what Avowed is supposed to be, except instead of it being sort of a Fallout / Starfield type of a thing, it's more of a Elder Scrolls type of a thing. And they did say, like, I think lengthwise it's supposed to be somewhat similar to like Outer Worlds in terms of like that's where you set your expectations, and I'm all about that. I'm all about like give me this type of RPG that I like, but don't make it over 100 hours to finish it.
It's such a striking visual style too. Like there's a couple of shots in that trailer where they're just like in these weird environments where the colors are just like super saturated and poppy.
Yeah, and like I said, if they can do like something very, very similar to Skyrim, which is like one of my favorite games of all time, then like I'm going to be all in on this game when it comes out, because I like that when it's shorter, you're like able to replay it without it feeling overwhelming. Like I played Breath of the Wild once and I loved that game, but it was so long that I was like, I'm probably not going to play this a second time.
Yeah, it's so much time investment.
Yeah, but The Outer Worlds, like I didn't necessarily finish it like every time I started it, but I must have started it at least two or three times.
Mm-hmm.
So it just feels like, I don't know, there is something to like not having like an overwhelmingly long game. if it's super long, I may not even start it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do like the art style as well. I like that it does look colorful and everything. I think it's going to be a fun game. So what number are we on?
We're on three. I talked about this last week as well, but I just can't stop watching the trailer for that cookie cutter Metroidvania game where you're like a robot who gets a bunch of really interesting weapons, including one of your weapons is just a motorcycle, which I think is very cool. But it's got a very cool art style, and there's a shot in the trailer where they like zoom out and you can see part of the map, which I'm all about. Like very good Metroidvania. It's got a like almost too gross art style for me, but I'm still into it. Where you can like, even though you're fighting basically just like robots at some of the times, like they still bleed and you can like rip stuff out of them. But I just like the way this is animated is just like so cool to see. And the combat just looks like you have a giant chainsaw as one of your weapons. One of your weapons is literally a motorcycle. One of them seems to be like a big spear. I don't know. I love everything about this. I can't stop watching the trailer for it. I don't know what systems it's coming out for, actually. I'm watching. Oh, no, it's coming out exclusively for Steam right now. So I think I will probably will pick this up on Steam, but I think this would also make a great Switch game. But yeah, that's my number three. I believe our number twos and threes will be pretty similar, but what's your number two?
My number two is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
That's not to spoil anything. That's my number one.
I was going to say, I can see us maybe having our number ones and twos like flip-flopped, but let's talk about it now because it looked very, very good. And they did say early 2024. I hope it doesn't end up getting pushed back, yeah. But like, I loved Final Fantasy VII Remake and am very excited to play more of that game and see where the story's going. And it's interesting to me, even though I didn't play like the original Final Fantasy VII, just to like hear about, okay, this is what it was and here's how they're changing things and this is why this is different.
Even
that stuff is interesting to
me. That's the best thing. Like, so Starfield is my number two and Final Fantasy VII is my number one. So we can talk about Final Fantasy VII first and then we'll talk about Starfield since that's probably your number one.
Yeah.
Starfield is very cool to me and I'm so pumped for it, but thinking about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth just like sets my brain on fire because like I don't know what's going to be different or how they're going to incorporate things, and it's just like such a huge question about how much this game is going to incorporate or like where it's going to stop basically from the original. Because, like, I was really expecting the first trailer of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth to have at least some Golden Saucer stuff, which is, like, a crazy party city they go to. It's like an amusement park city, which is probably going to look insane in modern graphics. But we didn't see any of that. We saw that Junon. We saw some Cosmo Canyon stuff. I don't know. I can't wait to see more of this game. It's coming on two discs, which is also just a weird fact. But yeah, this was, and also that's the way it was revealed. Like Keeley knows how to run a show, even though his show probably wasn't the best one of Summer Games Fest. Having this as the one more thing was a masterstroke, and I can't believe he got it. But yeah, that's why it's my number one. But we can talk about your number one if you want to.
Well, I was gonna say, did they show any of like Wall Market in the trailers for Final Fantasy VII Remake?
They did. Final Fantasy Remake was a known quantity, I feel, for a lot of reasons because we always knew it was only going to be Midgar. Like once you get out of Midgar, then like game will end basically. But in this one, you step out into the open world after Midgar basically. That's the first time you see the world map. You've been in Midgar for the last 3 hours or something, and you finally step out on the world map, you can go wherever. Basically, you can only go one place, but I don't know, man. I don't think this is ever going to have a world map, at least not in this game. Wouldn't it be crazy if in the next one there was a world map? But I think it is going to be linear, but unlike the first game, I don't think you're going to be able to return to places as much because you definitely were just like in Midgar. So like you went back to Wall Market a couple of times. You went back to the place where like Seventh Heaven was a couple of times. You're constantly kind of retreading the same couple of maps, but I don't think you can do that. Because like once you're out of Midgar, you're going. Like you're on a collision course basically for the rest of the game. So I don't know that they're going to be able to return to places as much. I think that I really don't know if we're going to get to like Nibelheim or whatever you say it. You didn't see Vincent at all in this, and who knows how they're going to incorporate him because he wasn't even a player that like if you wanted to get Vincent in the first game, that was like a thing you just had to figure out. Like there was a safe in a house, and if you figured out the combination to it, and you did the combination with the bad controls in like under 30 seconds. Then you would unlock him, but you could go the whole game and not get him. And I think there's another character, Yuffie, I guess, is maybe another character like that, but I don't know.
Well, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure both of those characters, or not both of those characters, Yuffie, like she's an integrator, of course.
Yeah.
And so I don't know like if it'll make any difference if you haven't played that, because I feel like you meet some other characters in that. One of them does, I believe, die. Well, I'm trying to remember what happens in Integrate.
It's interesting. It
was
say
a crazy
that.
Chapter.
So Yuffie and I think Vincent are the two like optional people. that you can go through the whole game and not get them. And so I wonder if you won't get Vincent in the second game, but he will have some sort of intergrade style DLC where he is introduced. I could totally see that.
I'm trying to remember if he's one of the characters that's in Integrate.
Oh, really? That would be crazy.
I don't remember, though.
He is a vampire.
Okay.
So that's something to be aware of. Might not
have been. There was some character in it that was like really strange, and I wasn't sure what to make of them. Mm-hmm. Or like if they were coming back, but there was like a bunch of characters that Integrate introduces, and I a little bit don't know what I'm talking about, so I don't want to like make any statements about so and so was definitely in
this,
but anyway, yeah, I'm very hyped for that game as well.
Let's talk about Starfield.
Starfield was my number one. It is like I love a Bethesda RPG, and I love No Man's Sky as well, and combining the two. And maybe throw in a little bit of Mass Effect there, and I'm on board. And so, they did say that it was going to run at like 30 frames per second on console, and like that's a little bit of a bummer because you always hear Phil Spencer talking about how powerful the Series X is. Yeah, so it's like the most powerful console.
I wonder if they would pump it up eventually if they're like, "Hey, we figured it out. Here's a big patch." Like a year later, maybe they're like, "Hey, we figured out how to optimize this. So this is going to be like the remastered edition or whatever."
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Who's to say? I know that like Redfall launched it with 30 frames a second on console, and they're like, "Don't worry, we're going to add 60 frames per second later," even though nobody cares about that game. But yeah, I don't know if they could do that with Starfield just because it's such a big game. But
I don't know.
Like I say, I'm bummed because I do love like high frame rate for my games. I prefer higher frame rate to like higher resolution or whatever they call it. There's always like performance mode and fidelity mode, and I always pick performance mode. Yeah. And that's like if you're comparing the PS5 and the Series X, like all the games that launch exclusively for the PS5 have that option, and for some reason Starfield doesn't, which is a little bit of a bummer. But I did also just spend like probably over 100 hours playing Zelda, and that's 30 frames a second. So, yeah. I mean, how much can I complain about it? But it is a little bit different when it's a first-person shooter, but I guess you can play it in third-person as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I also may end up playing it on PC, so who's to say?
Who's to say?
But I think it looks great. I loved what they showed. I thought it looked very cool. I could spend a lot of time just roaming around being a space pirate. So
the gunplay looks awesome. I think that was a criticism they got at the last year when they showed a little bit of Starfield.
It looked very rough the last time they showed it.
The flying around looked rough. There was a part where like you shot and then you used your jetpack to kind of fly up to a ridge, and people were like, "Oof, that looks not good." But now the jump pack looks great. The guns all look great. The gunplay seems super fun. So, I mean, the delay has been a benefit.
Yeah, hopefully it was all done for the sake of cleaning up bugs and everything. Phil Spencer, I believe, also said that it is like the least buggy Bethesda game, or it's going to be the least buggy launch of a Bethesda game in however long or whatever. But
we'll see.
Well, yeah, it remains to be seen, but I am also very much of the mind that this could be my game of the year, even if I love Tears of the Kingdom.
I'm so curious to see, where it's going to fall. As far as I'm concerned, these are the only two contenders, unless Silksong comes out, but we've been radio silence on that since they said it was going to be delayed.
Yeah, and I think they did say, along with Nintendo, launch of a new console, nothing before spring 2024.
Did they say nothing before spring 2024?
Was that not them? I thought they just said
it's taking a little longer. We had always anticipated hitting the June mark, but it's taking longer. The game is great and big, but it's just going to be a little. I don't think they gave a date.
Maybe I'm thinking of something else then. I know there was something else in addition to the whatever the next Nintendo hardware is, where they were like, it came out and everybody was bummed because they were like, don't expect this before spring 2024. But I thought it was that, but maybe it wasn't. Either way, there was a lot of cool stuff at Summer Games Fest. I guess, do we keep referring to it as fake E3, or do we just like,
it's now Summer Games Fest? I don't know. It's just, it's so crazy to not have an E3. People call it Key 3 for Keeley. I don't know. Maybe we will just start calling it Summer Games Fest. It's weird to say.
Yeah, and I still do hope we'll see something from Nintendo. And like I said, I expect maybe there will be a Pikmin Direct, but yeah, they could also they could also do one in like August or September and be like, this is what's coming this winter. And maybe that's just the next thing they have in line, but I don't know. It does seem like they have a gaping hole in their fall lineup, which they did say that was why they didn't want to do E3, is because they had a light fall lineup, and we didn't want to believe them because that doesn't sound like something Nintendo would put out there, but maybe it is true. They just don't really have much. But they did launch Tears of the Kingdom, so I mean, how mad can you be at them?
Well, speaking of, Zach, before we started recording, you revealed to me that you have completed it.
I did. So I did it a little bit out of order, accidentally. You know, you have to go to the castle, and there's like, the castle is now floating, which happens at the very start of the game. And I do wonder if you could actually go there at the very start of the game now. I bet somebody has done that. Wasn't that like a thing in Breath of the Wild where you could basically go directly to the final boss?
The speed run right now for Tears of the Kingdom, I think, is around 52 minutes.
Okay. That's interesting. Well, because you would have to go.
The first part is so much longer.
Yeah. You have to go through the entire tutorial, Sky Island, which is fairly lengthy. But
it did not get shown at Summer Games Fest because it was, or sorry, at AGDQ or SGDQ rather, because it came out way too close to when submissions were due. But definitely at AGDQ 2024, we're going to see a pretty amazing speed run of it, probably.
Now, you have not finished it yet, so I don't want to get into anything that would be a spoiler, but I loved it. I thought that, like, the final moments of the story are, like, you know, huge set pieces that are very cool, and it's a very cool thing to see. I took a lot of screenshots. Actually, that was going to be my parting wisdom for this week, is as you're playing games, especially on the Switch or, like, the PS5, you have like a quick, easy screenshot button. Just take screenshots throughout your thing, and then when you're done, you can like go back through that folder and just sort of relive different moments of it and be like, oh yeah, I remember that. That was going to be my parting wisdom for this week, but there was a lot of cool stuff that happens there, and I realized I did it out of order because it's possible to go down into the depths underneath the castle before you've explored the actual castle itself. Mm-hmm. I would say go to the castle itself first and do that stuff. And then I think the intended order after that would be to go to Kakariko Village, where those like floating rings. And talk to those people. And it'll sort of set you on a path towards those sky islands that are covered in like clouds and storms and stuff, you know, down in sort of the southern part of the map. And there's some stuff there that you want to do for sure. But yeah, that's all I'll say about it. It's very cool. You want to do all of that stuff first before you drop down. The only other advice I would give is like, you have that, what is the armor set called that like basically negates some of the gloom damage?
Oh yeah, I think it's just called gloom armor. I don't remember, but yeah, it's the one you get from talking to those big stone heads.
Yeah. The only regret I had is that I didn't upgrade that armor more.
Yeah.
So I would say do that and you're probably good. But it was awesome. I finished the game because I played through that final section there, and then realized that I had not gone to the castle, and so I kind of did things out of order. So I went back in and did that, and I've now also finished all the shrines. I did all the shrines.
Wow.
And didn't realize I didn't even come remotely close to having collected all of the Koroks. I don't know how many I had, but it was not very many. I know like you can get enough to completely unlock your entire like inventory slots, but like also there's more to get after that. And then the reward for getting all of them is sort of a joke, but yeah, I didn't come close. But no. I don't know. I think I'm about good on like my time with Tears of the Kingdom for now anyway.
I have a couple more things I want to do. I've done the four phenomena on the four regions, and I've done a lot of side stuff. I've mostly been doing side stuff, actually, since I completed the fourth dungeon, or temple, rather. I think that I want to do... I haven't done all the Dragon's Tears things, so I want to do those, and then I probably will... After I do that, I think I'm going to make my way to the castle.
That's a good plan. Have you completely unlocked the Depths map?
No, I should do that as well, yeah. I mean, there's a ton of shrines I haven't done as well.
I was going to say, I did all of the Depths. I unlocked all of the Depths map, and that will help you find more shrines because all of the light roots are tied to shrines on the surface.
I have started my second row of hearts.
Okay, so you're getting there.
I'm getting there.
And I did fully upgrade my battery as well. I made a lot of use out of the air bike thing to get around. Which reminded me a lot of Watch Dogs Legion. I basically flew around that entire game on a drone, which was very fun. Which basically made it so that like I didn't do a lot of climbing. I have managed to avoid climbing between Ascend and flying around on a drone. I was able to avoid doing a lot of climbing. Which, so like, even though people are like, oh, well, the surface level, it's the same map as Breath of the Wild. I'm like, yeah, but I explored it in a very different way. So, I don't know. It's great. It probably is game of the year. Probably will be for most people. The question remains for me is how good is Starfield? But it's definitely, for now, on our list of our top 10 builder, it's definitely number one.
Do you think that anyone will have Final Fantasy 16 as their game of the year?
Oh, that's a good question. So I did play the demo and I liked it. I was into it because I do like Game of Thrones and I do like Final Fantasy, and this is basically Game of Thrones, the Final Fantasy game. And yeah, the demo definitely jumps around a little bit. I don't know if that's how it's going to go in the main game, but there's like some flashbacks that happen, and one of those is like a way to sort of give you a tutorial. But yeah, I'm interested in this game and seeing where it's going. Also, like one of the kids, there's like a kid in the demo, and the voice actor is the same voice actor as the kid from the Plague Tale games, and maybe it's just because he has like a somewhat unique delivery, but I immediately recognized him. I was like, oh, that's the kid from Plague Tale. I don't know why that stuck out to me, but it did. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the combat. It wasn't like the best combat I've ever played in a game, but I didn't think that about Final Fantasy VII Remake either. You don't switch around to different characters the way you do in Final Fantasy VII Remake, but at least not yet. I don't know if maybe you add characters to your party and that's a thing you can do, but yeah. And then there's like the big set pieces where you're like the icons fighting, which is very interesting and cool to look at, but I'm into it. I won't get to play it when it initially launches because I'm going to be on vacation that week or the week right after that. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to wait, which means no podcast episode next week. And so hopefully, actually it might be 2 weeks that we won't have a podcast episode. And then after that, hopefully I'll get a chance to play some and have some impressions of Final Fantasy 16.
I'm excited to hear.
I know you're not into it because you don't like the like Game of Thrones sort of court politics stuff, but... So maybe not for you, but I did enjoy this game. And then I did play some of the Lies of P demo.
How was it?
And it's basically Bloodborne.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Is what everybody says. I don't know. Like, I think Elden Ring gave me this like false sense of hope that I was now going to be able to get into these Souls-like games. Yeah. And the last like several of them I've tried, like minus Grime, which is like a side-scrolling Metroidvania Souls-like game, aside from that style of game, which I can get into, these other ones that are like Steel Rising or Lies of P, some reason they're not working for me. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe I just have to be in the right mindset for it. But like I got to the boss in the demo, and like most, like everybody else along the path, because it was the same thing with that, what was it, Wolong Fallen Dynasty?
Yeah,
I had a
yeah.
similar problem with that game where I started and tried it and couldn't get into it. And like you're able to fairly easily take out the minions that you find along the path to the boss, but once you get to the boss has like an enormous health bar that like
yeah.
goes down very slowly, and like you can take two or three hits and then you're dead.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, so I think what you want me to do is just grind through that area where all the minions are over and over again until I level up. And I don't have a lot of interest in doing that. So I don't know. I tried it, the boss fight a couple of times, and I was like, yeah, maybe this is not for me. Mm. So, but I do think it will do better than Steel Rising. I a little bit because it was right after Elden Ring, there was that Thymesia game and Steel Rising. And I was like, oh, these games are going to like do really well this year because everybody's like hungry for more Souls-like content yeah. after Elden Ring. And then they came out and like nobody talked about them and they just kind of went away. And I was like, maybe not. I don't know what the deal is here. So it could be a similar situation to that, or maybe it'll do pretty well since there hasn't been like a big FromSoft game that came out like in the months leading up to it. So I don't know. What about you? You been playing, watching anything?
Not really. So this past week, I've been having to go in early to work every day. So at night, I haven't really had the energy to do anything except for like just chill out. So except for Tears of the Kingdom, I'm still not really playing anything. That's like my main thing still. But I'm not really progressing the story this week. I basically just wandered around and tried to do side stuff. I told you, I think, that now that I have the shrine sensor, I just kind of been wandering wherever I haven't been to see if I can find shrines. But nothing really from me.
It's worth noting, it is like a rare thing in a game when you can make the side stuff that you do like outside of the story every bit as compelling
True.
As like the story itself. Like I'll play a lot of games that are similar to that and I'll be like, okay, I'm gonna stop progressing the story for a while and do other stuff, and you just kind of like, you can quickly burn out on that yeah. and feel like maybe I don't want to play more of this game, or I just need to get right back to the story, or else I'm going to fall out yeah. or fall off of this game altogether. But not so with Tears of the Kingdom.
Very true.
You could just spend hours exploring and it would feel just as fun and worthwhile as doing the main story stuff. So it's great. Do you have any parting wisdom?
I do. We talked a little bit about AGDQ, SGDQ. We didn't really do, sometimes we'll do like a breakdown of what we want to see, or like shows to speedruns to watch. I have been working my way through a little bit of them, but probably the best one I've seen is a one for Mario Odyssey. There's always a great Mario Odyssey run, and this one is no exception. So if you're looking for something to watch, there's a quick, it's like less than an hour, I think, a little run of Super Mario Odyssey, a great speed run. The key to a great speed run is a charismatic runner, but also charismatic people on the couch who can explain stuff while the runner is doing things. And they go over a lot of the tricks and stuff, and he goes for some crazy tricks and gets some, and some he doesn't, but they explain it still. I would highly recommend, if you're interested in picking any of the things to watch for Summer Games Fest. Also, I keep saying Summer Games Fest, but it's AGDQ. The other one that I have not finished watching yet, but is very interesting to watch, there is a blindfolded speedrun of Breath of the Wild, which is crazy to see. I started watching it, and I'm watching him do like Great Plateau stuff, but it is like... very impressive to watch. So definitely,
I don't even know how you would begin to do that.
It's a lot of audio cues, because thankfully when you run on different surfaces, it sounds different. It's like when you run on stone, you can hear the tap, tap, tap of your feet as opposed to like grass. Sure. And so it was crazy because at one part, like, he knows an enemy's going to be shooting arrows. And so as he's running past, he's just tapping A, and he like picks up two arrows that are just in the ground. And so he knows, like, okay, now I turn because I've picked up at least two arrows. It's very crazy to watch. And the people commentating are very informative and cool. So those are my parting wisdom is to check those two speedruns out. The Super Mario Odyssey one and the Blindfolded Breath of the Wild are two great ones to see.
That's crazy. I'm just thinking about like how many times you would have had to play that to recognize, okay, this is where I'm at on the map, because I can tell by the sound of where I'm walking.
I don't even know how you would train for something like that, but it's crazy. Yeah,
especially with a map that size. That's crazy to me. But yeah, on that note, why don't you go ahead and follow us on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Starside Cafe. And if you have comments or anything like that, send them to us at starsidecafe@gmail.com. And leave our podcast a rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.